Well, thank you, Lisa Brooks. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Bucky's Auto Service Centers has been there for you since 1948. They only left us for 3 days, but they're back as well. With 16 locations, you can't go wrong with Bucky's Auto Service Centers. The best, what it had was, Tom, we are promoting them on the air. They got such a huge,
spigot,
right,
of customers
coming in.
They had to turn it off for 3 days.
Just for a little while, give themselves a break. Like Trenchless in Seattle. Trenchless in Seattle used to advertise with us for you, Jake. And we made them. They were a big part of the show.
You couldn't find a trench for 100 miles around.
And then they said, we're getting too much business. We got to stop it.
Right.
Oh, those are the good old days. I looked down. I said, well, I got to do a trenchless spot. 18 minutes later.
Yeah, that's right. It had its own soundtrack.
I feel like they still get brought up at least once a month
show. Yeah.
I wonder if they'd start paying us to never say their name again.
That would be good. Wait, look at you thinking, huh?
Yeah.
Good for you there. Despite reinstatement of an officer who punched the handcuffed woman, Seattle police haven't violated Reform Pact. That from the federal attorney. So you want to hear him say what I just said? Is this a big deal? Okay, hang on. Let's see. Here is your police officer, Gil. This is Rich O'Neill. Is happy with the federal attorney siding with them in a response to the reinstatement of Officer Shepard.
This was very good news. The Department of Justice, in their opinion, our contract does not conflict with the settlement agreement. Our contract is not unconstitutional. It was a real plus for us. They also went on to say that the reinstatement of Officer Adley Shepard by an arbitrator should not put us in jeopardy of going out of compliance with the federal court.
Okay, so the woman was drunk and disorderly. She's in the back of the car. She's handcuffed. Shepard says he kicked her. She kicked him in the face, and then he punched her. Later on, he also said, hey, this is the way we were trained. And they've changed it since, but before they changed it, we were trained to sort of do this sort of stun move. And he ended up breaking, I think, her orbital socket. That's hard. Yeah, that's a tough bone to break. And so he whacks her. Then he gets...
The police department fired him.
Right.
And so then the union, and he took it to court, and they had to go to an arbitrator. Mm-hmm. And an arbitrator decided that, you know what? Sure, he shouldn't have done what he did, but that deserves 15-day suspension, not losing his job.
And his back pay. So then he comes back in there. So the question was, did that sort of mess up the deal?
That's right.
And the arbitrator and the judge takes a look at it and goes, no, you know what? Everything's copacetic. The contract can go forward, and the guy's reinstated. It doesn't violate the fact that you guys have this consent decree.
Yeah, first off, the ruling, it's up to the judge. The judge hasn't decided, but what's significant is that the DOJ, the feds, are saying, yes, that this should not invalidate, that even though the arbitrator went against what the city and the Seattle police and what the DOJ would prefer, that this should not invalidate everything else that they've done to reform themselves. Mm-hmm. And the significant aspect of this whole push is that now you've got the DOJ on the same side as the police department by saying it was a mistake. They should not have reinstated him, but it's a single isolated incident, and that doesn't override the general thrust. So that's significant. So I would be surprised if Judge Robart now comes back and says, even though the city agrees and the feds agree, I disagree, and so we're going to have to revisit this. So it is it's a
Officer
good
Officer Shepard said, hey, listen, I was just following how we were trained. Right?
Yeah, but the police didn't agree with
that. Let's change the colors. Let's keep her black. Let's make him white. You think we'd still be talking about this, or would he be a racist cop?
I don't know what you're talking about. He was fired.
No. I'm just saying. But he gets back in. He gets back in. Right?
But he didn't. He got fired by the police department. An arbitrator.
I understand.
Was the one who put him back on.
I understand.
So yeah, I think it would be the same.
All right.
The question is, does it have kind of the ripple effect socially? I think that's maybe what you're after. But in terms of the judgment, they said what he did was out of whack. He was a black officer, and it still happened to him. If it was a white officer, it would have still happened to him.
O'Neill says this is a positive for the future.
As soon as everybody gets on the same sheet of music and lets the police do their job, it'll be a safer city. The staffing crisis that we're going through will be solved. You know, it sounds very pie in the sky, but it can happen. Seattle is a top-notch police department, and what makes it that is the rank-and-file officers. They want leaders, and they want elected officials who will tell them what the rules are, and let's go out and do our job.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And by the way, he still doesn't have his job back. They've rehired and they have to pay him, but they're not letting him go back out on the streets.
Parkland shooting, where the gun control and safety school now stands. I saw a great piece in Vox. every time there was a mass shooting, that's four people more being killed, including the shooter. That's how the FBI determines mass shooting. In most cases, shortly after the shooting, gun control rights were expanded.
Wait a minute. Gun control.
Gun rights were expanded.
Okay, that's the opposite.
Gun rights were expanded. And they listed in 24 different states, they loosened gun laws. So permit to carry, stand your ground. Ohio had one. Florida had one. Mississippi had one. Minnesota had one. Every time there was a mass shooting, you would expect it to go the other way and contract. It didn't. It would expand in the direction of the gun owner. In 2018, after Parkland, that stopped.
Yes. Okay. Yes. That's a perfect setup. That, and even the NRA reports that too. That there were many more the restrictions on gun rights. If you're a gun rights advocate, or if you're a gun control advocate, the expansion of gun control laws prospered. Now, the significant thing for the NRA. That is definitely true that gun rights activists, took a step back. Gun control advocates took a step forward, but it was all at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
At the federal level, because of this bipartisan gridlock, nothing could get accomplished. The only thing that there was agreement on is banning bump stocks, which had nothing to do. That had more to do with the Las Vegas shooting than Parkland. But so it looks like it's at the more local level or the state level where, influence of Parkland and the students involved had some real impact.
New York Times talked to four Parkland students that said,
something that I've always wished that the media knew is that had what we went through.
People could see.
Politics, not everything's about March for Our Lives, and whereas March for Our Lives is great,
it's
and
amazing.
The fact that they can make a change is amazing, but we have stories that are worth being told.
Yeah.
And I think that the
and
media
worth hearing.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think that the media is just so quick to politicize everything because that's what makes everything
a story.
A story. Mm-hmm. But it's not everything's political, and we're actually going through something that's like
real.
And
that's
really
happening.
Bad. Yeah, and it happened to us.
And we're all it happened when we were like 14.
Yeah.
Or 15.
If I were that one girl, I'd be like, please stop finishing my sentences. The job of a storyteller, which is what journalists are, is to find the conflict, and you find the one side and the other side, and that's what you do. So they say, it gets politicized. If politics is one person representing one thing, another person representing another thing, that's how stories are told, right?
Okay.
And I've probably done tons and tons of feature pieces on what are these kids like. Now, New York Times had a piece about a girl who decided she just couldn't stand going to college in the United States. So she's in Ireland.
Hmm.
She was one of the kids who was in one of the classrooms and heard the shooting and stuff. She says she still has nightmares, but she feels safer over in Ireland. She's a further away from it, and she likes the gun control of Ireland, so she feels safe in Ireland. So they've done plenty of profile pieces on these kids, these survivors of this horrible incident in Parkland.
Do you resent them?
I don't resent them one bit.
You don't? Okay.
No, they're teenagers, and they went through a traumatic thing. G. Scott was on Cairo Nights and talked with Patrick Petty, a Parkland student and the brother of the student who was killed.
Wow.
Is this yesterday? Yeah. He talked about the atmosphere of the school last year.
There's sort of a struggle between a gloominess that looms because of what happened. There's a struggle between that and love and caring, but from everybody from everyone that's there, the students and the teachers there. There's sort of a struggle between those two things, and on any given day, it can be one way or the other. But overall, there's a lot more love and a lot more care and attention for one another, and There's a lot of taking time out of your day just to check on your friends and see how they're doing.
One of the best things that'll come out of it is they're going to be much better about getting these kids that are showing plenty of signs that they've got something wrong with them, and they'll be better about tightening up how the ball was dropped so often when it came to even FBI calls from a woman that called up and said, listen, he says he's going to shoot up a school. Never got responded. 45 times the police went to the house. were not allowed to report on it because there was a political push to not have these kids go to jail, but to do some sort of counseling with them. The idea that we don't want to throw kids out of school, we don't want to suspend them, we don't want to discipline them, and we want to try to counsel them and coax them. Well, unfortunately, this kid was a ticking time bomb. People knew it. They said, hey, you can't carry a backpack to school anymore. Why not? Because they were afraid he's going to carry something with it. So, but they still let him continue to come to the school. The school knew it, but they didn't want the number to show up that he was being thrown out. So they kept him in there, and he was a mess, and everybody knew it. I said to Rye the other day, is there some kid at your high school that you guys would assume? He goes, oh, we play that game all the time. Who's most likely to kill a whole bunch of people? And he goes, yeah, we could point to probably five or six kids.
I know, but the
problem— I know, that's high school. I understand that sound. But I'm just saying is that the kids know— Everybody knew this Cruz guy was.
Kids don't know. See, that's the
problem. No. The people that Cruz was bringing in dead animals for and saying horrible things and bullying kids and threatening to kill kids, you don't think those kids knew? I'll bet as soon as those shots started to ring out in that school, they probably thought, that's Cruz. They probably knew because everybody else knew. Everyone else knew that this kid was a problem.
In retrospect, everybody knows. But if you just said there are four or five kids, yes. And only one, in fact, probably none of those five kids are ever going to shoot up a school.
Absolutely.
So the problem is it's the intervention. At what point are we giving up people's rights as individuals and privacy to then command them? In retrospect, obviously, the world would have been better off if they had somehow put Cruz in some kind of mental institution or some kind of, you know, counseling ward that would not have allowed this to happen. But the tricky part is, you could line up a bunch of losers or, you know, as they say in high school, or loners, and that's unfair to them because they may be all sorts of reasons why they're the way they are and they're not killers.
I understand.
That's the danger.
I got you. 2014, there was a piece that was done that the Obama administration picked up, and it showed that African-American kids at a greater rate are being disciplined, suspended, and thrown out of school.
That's
then they
right.
said what this does is, which makes perfect sense, if you're thrown out of school, you're not learning, and if you're not learning, you're probably on the streets, and if you're on the streets, you're probably committing a crime, and it was the sort of the pathway to prison. I think that's how they described it, because it was desperate, was the percentage of blacks to Asians to whites. So then they said, I'll tell you what, stop it. Stop just throwing these kids out of school.
Yeah.
Stop it. And they wanted each school to be able to send them every single year, whatever it was, how many kids were disciplined and how many kids got thrown out of school. Because don't forget, we want to centralize all control in Washington, D.C. So they came and they said, now you show us that you're behaving, but you're not disciplining these kids. So what did the schools did? They didn't discipline because they don't want the numbers to show up because they don't want this. They don't want the federal government to come down on them and affect their financing. So they let someone like Cruz, because we don't want Cruz to show up. They let Cruz continue to be who Cruz was. And they let this maniac in that school with those kids. You can trace it all the way back, Tom, to a really good intention, which is let's not have kids get disciplined and thrown out of school. That was the intention. And what happens is, once it gets into effect, you have a situation like this.
Well, but in this particular case, they had school counselors and a sheriff's deputy decided at one point that he should be forcibly committed for psychiatric evaluation. They ended up later changing their minds, and I don't know what happened to make them change their minds, but there were efforts involved, and the problem is you have to kind of respect...
Why did they change their mind?
And I don't know.
Because they don't want it to show up. Don't want that kid to go to jail, then it looks bad, Tom.
John, it already showed up. They'd already concluded that he should be forcibly committed, and then they changed their mind. They were on the record, they were planning on this, and then something happened. We'd have to go back. I don't have the details in front of me about changed, but the idea is that, unfortunately, because I don't want to make this sound like it's a sad news or bad news story, but there were a number of profiles about why people like Nicholas Cruz can't be put away. There aren't laws in effect that allow for this, you know, committing people that haven't yet done anything. They're just threatening. And so even though there was lots of intervention, there wasn't enough intervention to stop this kind of school shooting.
Right. The thing that you don't know about is the fact that they don't want him to show up as a statistic, so they continue to coddle him because they don't want Washington, D.C. to have a problem with kids are being kicked out of school.
That sounds to me like a theory projected by maybe a conservative. Is that possible, John? I mean, you're taking as fact something that's just one spin out of this. There are a lot of other interpretations of what could have happened.
And you don't have one. I'm telling you.
Well, because I wasn't prepared
out. I'm not asking her to. I read
random ideas.
I'm halfway through listening to this guy's book, which I wish somebody else had read it on Audible. His kid was one of the girls that was killed. And he has,
Parkland.
Yeah, in Parkland.
Okay.
And I understand he's off his rocker because this has happened. He quit his job. He sold his giant house. He lives in a mobile home park now with his wife, and he has decided. He doesn't even say Cruz's name. He uses his number that is on his inmate file. His book
is this
and
the guy who talked to Trump?
He's angry for good reason.
He's furious, absolutely.
So he has now put together, and he's suing Broward County. He has put together.
So it's, that's his theory.
This is his theory. And the nice thing is he's supporting it with his attorneys, and he can see every single time. So he's got he's asked for a Freedom of Information request. He's got every single time the police went. He's got every single report, and he's able to show you that it got up to a point that somebody in a higher level of bureaucratic power, unelected official, decided, you know what? Let's not have this number show up. We don't want this one on the statistics. We don't want this one on the books. So let's do what we can to not have him be committed. Now, the good news is in Florida, they passed a law that you can go to somebody, get a judge. I think we have the same thing in Washington now. If you can show that the person is mentally unstable, they can take the guy's gun away for a year.
That's right. Yeah. That's passed post Parkland.
Yes.
Okay. But so, see, I think that makes, I like that better if you'd set it up. Okay. This is one of the parents. He's done all of his due diligence and this is his take on things.
Yeah.
Then I'm willing to grant that, okay, that makes sense. If he's done that kind of research, that may be very well the case.
And others have found it as well.
It's not good.
Others have found it as well. But you don't want to point to that because it's easier to say, hey, let's go after the guns. I looked up.
Well, maybe. But I mean, they did go after the guns because you can take that gun away from that guy now. A lot of gun advocates. Gun rights advocates might say, hey, don't take away that gun because that next guy that everybody else thinks is crazy could be me.
A Vox says of 156 mass shootings from 2009 to 2016, how many of them involved somebody under the age of 21 with an AR-15?
I know there are a lot of qualifiers there.
The answer is two. Okay. And it was one was purchased legally, one was not. So you pass a law to stop AR-15s. What are you going to do with the other 156? Another 150.
Well, the thing is, if you could figure out a way to deny those people the guns, the shooters, it needn't be with any particular kind of weapon, and it needn't be under 21.
Right, right. So you do a better job of when they show signs that they're going to kill people, you go, you get the kid, you get him some sort of mental help,
and you don't
worry that Washington, D.C. is going to hold something back from you because you're disciplining a child and throwing him out of school.
I know, gentlemen. I mean, I think we're getting back to this.
Yeah.
It does involve this is the thing that most NRA supporters are afraid of, taking away somebody's gun.
No.
And that is what this law says.
They don't mind no, the NRA, Tom, will tell you, if they're number one when it comes to mental illness, they don't want you to be mentally ill and have a gun. They don't want those rights.
But
right?
How that's determined is what they're resisting.
Right. So when the Social Security and when the Obama administration said, if you apply to be able, we're just putting this into perspective, this is part of the problem, because they have every reason to be paranoid. If you apply to be able to have someone have power of attorney and you're over the age of 70 or whatever it is, which then you lose the right to have a gun and they can come take your gun from you. Because what they're saying is if you obviously have a son or a daughter or a lawyer or something like that coming in and taking care of your finances, you have to sign a bunch of papers to have your Social Security check sent to somebody else. You probably are not mentally competent enough to have a gun. Did you know that?
Sort of,
that's why the people from the NRA feel like, hey, it's a camel's nose under the tent.
Exactly, and that's why they fight it every step of the way. And luckily, the Parkland students have convinced, at least in the state of Florida, that that was going to be justified.
All right, well, we'll see if it saves any lives, the fact that in the state of Washington, if you're under the age of 21, you can't buy a rifle.
Well, we had two incidents, John, in this state just in the last 2 years.
Right.
So if it could prevent those two situations, that's a good
thing. You're 170 times more likely in the state of Washington to die of the flu. We'll take a quick break. Come right back.
So?
Uncle Shoot Bingo. Proud to bring you. You're just jealous.
Great song. Yeah, I'm jealous.
Rachel and I danced.
I know. Right. I'm happy and I'm luxuriating in George Harrison.
I think he smoked twice as much as any other Beatle.
You think so?
Oh, he was. I love this song, but boy, my guitar gently weeps.
It's your problem, John.
How about My Sweet Lord?
Now, My Sweet Lord, that not only wasn't a great song, it was plagiarized. So that's two strikes against
all
that
right,
one.
That or we
this
all
one, something the way she moves. This is great. Yeah.
How about Muckleshoot Bingo? They'd like a mention. You know what? The know-it-all quiz is going to be happening tomorrow, which I think is going to start in about 10 minutes. And you get a chance to get yourself lots of great prizes. Two tickets, Seattle Opera's Revolution of Steve Jobs, Tom, will be. This is an original show put on, create brand new opera, Seattle Opera, The Revolution of Steve Jobs. And two tickets go to you. We are the only talk radio show probably anywhere in the entire free world
that gives
away tickets to the opera.
I love that.
That's we are.
I'm going to go twice, I think.
How's that? Did you get freebies? Freebies?
You bet.
I got to say, Muckleshoot Ringo is my favorite Beatle.
That's that punning you're known for and disliked for. All right, Rachel. Let's see. When it comes to snowstorms, apparently.
Oh, my God. What a mess out there, huh? What a mess.
Well, you can hear the sound of the shovels, but you can't hear the sound of the registers ringing.
How about that white stuff?
Why are we talking like that?
Somebody put on social media.
By the way, the jealousy comment is this.
Yes. We need to explain it because I can't tell if our cameras are on or not.
No, all right, we don't know.
Yes.
I have decided that every time Rachel comes in,
that's
whatever
right.
the bump music is, I will dance with her.
That's
so we
right.
danced sort of a cha-cha yesterday, and then we did
that
a disco
confusing.
Move. And this was a slow dance, kind of a high school slow dance.
It was
number.
A bad day for a slow dance because I just ate this garlic-packed broccoli thing, and I was holding my breath the whole time because
right.
I know that you are very critical.
Very nose-oriented. Okay, uh-huh. So what did you find?
I just feel bad because you impose yourself on Rachel, and I feel as guests, we shouldn't be so heavy-handed hosting.
Good alliteration.
Wow. Hold on. Well, let's ask Rachel.
3-4 times she's mentioned how much she doesn't like to lead or follow, and yet every time you force her to dance.
Yet I crave the human touch.
That's true.
At
right,
work.
Let's do this. Hold
okay.
No, then it's a good
it's not
point.
Enough
yes.
touching
hang on.
At work.
Hang on.
Okay.
Rachel.
Yeah.
Are you uncomfortable with me dancing with you during the bump coming in on this segment?
No. But I am uncomfortable dancing in general. But the addition of you makes it worth it.
There we go.
That's right. Very Aziz Ansari of you, John.
We'll get to that. By the way,
it's
that's
very dad issues of me.
The only person uncomfortable is Tom. All right. So the chef, did I mention that the storm has caused businesses to have some problems?
You did mention that, and then we ignored you and talked about other things. Yeah, so there are plenty of people who are not as privileged as we are. If they don't show up for work in the snow because the place they happen to work is closed, they don't get paid. You know, there was a day that I didn't come to work, and I was paid even though I didn't come here. Some may say that's unfair. I say it's amazing. But I have a friend who's a musician. All his gigs have been canceled for the past week, so he didn't get paid. A lot of small businesses. There was an article in Seattle Met that was saying that a lot of small businesses, places like ice cream shops and boutiques, were closed. And then there, you know, like my yoga studio was closed. And I never thought about that all these people didn't get paid. So what they're saying now is just try to support your local businesses. Try to give them the money that they didn't get over the past week. But it is a bummer. And now let's talk about socialism, because that would get those people paid. I mean, I don't know what you do in these situations. I guess if you're someone who works independently for yourself, or if you work at a shop like this, are you supposed to kind of plan for these things and have money saved up so that this doesn't impact you as much?
My wife's a therapist, and yeah, she had people cancel on her, or she had canceled during the storm because people can't. They're not going to risk their lives to help their mental health, and so yeah, you just take a hit in your pocketbook.
Mm-hmm. So if they miss a day or 2 days, or in Sammamish, businesses were closed for 3 days.
Yeah.
Kooky. But, you know, then again, other people made money. People that were out there shoveling driveways made money. The plow trucks made money. People selling salt and shovels and things. So people make money.
But what about the ice cream scoopers?
But I would assume the economy takes a hit. I mean, sure, there are people that benefit from that, but they're in the vast minority.
But the money comes back around again, because then you have auto body shops doing well, right? There's people slamming into one another.
That's true.
I was at a Discount Tire in Issaquah. The whole bunch of us sitting around because our cars had run into a curb and broke the tire or something else. So Don't worry, Tom. The economy just
broke
keeps...
the tire. Did they throw the tire through the window?
This is getting Illuminati. Do you think the snow is a conspiracy to help people at auto body shops?
Speaking of conspiracies, when it comes to weather, there is this idea that whenever there's a blizzard of some sort and people are forced inside, they are forced in tight, confined spaces where there's very little room for two people to move unless they're moving up and down.
Whoa. Yeah, so the idea is that babies are often born 9 months after a snowstorm or a natural disaster.
Tom, I told you I'm running on 2 hours of sleep.
I guess all so. Right. And I'm running on 2 doses of uncomfortable.
Hey, he's a wordsmith. He was painting a word picture, and it was a very clear...
My first high five to Tom ever.
Yeah.
That is funny.
It All right, is fun on. Watching two middle-aged men high five.
Okay.
That's so natural. Cool.
I went right-handed. Tom went left-handed.
I know. It was, you know,
okay,
who knows?
So is it true that when there is a blizzard, people copulate?
Well, as the Cairo Authority on people moving up and down during a natural disaster, I will tell you that the article that was sent to me by Jacob earlier today had conflicting reports.
Oh, swell.
Some doctors said, yes, this does happen. Some doctors said, no, this doesn't happen. But one of the doctors said that if it's a low-impact natural disaster, kind of like what we just had, people were safe at home, that's when people are in the mood to, how do you describe it?
I don't remember.
I don't want to
remember.
Hippity-dippity. But if it's a serious disaster, then not so much.
Yeah, I think if you're stressed, that things aren't going to work.
Yeah, or if you're like floating down your street
if
on
you're
a
drowning.
Yes,
you
exactly.
Don't have time to
even though that could be your last wish. But I just so recently I went on a trip to Hawaii with my mom. I may note against my will, she forced me. And while we were there, she told me that I was conceived in Hawaii. I had no idea.
Huh.
So I felt happy to be back in my true homeland.
Wow, you and Obama.
Yes, we're one and the same. Did your parents ever tell you about where and when you were conceived?
God, no. That's interesting.
Do you care about knowing that your parents are real people and know that they have done such things? Does that bother you?
That's not the bothering. The question is geography. That would be interesting. If there was some unique geographical, you know, place, I assume that it was just here in Seattle. So.
I'm a very exotic person.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
All right, so the answer is no, that people do not, or unless they might. If
the answer
if
is maybe.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Low impact disasters. Bring them on.
Let's take some calls on the text line of people who tried to conceive during the snow.
Let's actually, we just make it simple. We'll go around the room. Did anybody have nookie during the snowstorm? Andrew.
No.
Survey over. We tricked Andrew into giving out some of his very personal information about his life. None of us were ever going to do it, Andrew.
We were going to say. You fell for it.
Oh, that's not fair. All right.
If everybody else did nookie during the snowstorm,
John,
with you?
John, you are terrible. You've already embarrassed poor Jacob on the air talking about his love life. Now you've gone after Andrew.
I didn't go after him.
And forced danced with Rachel.
Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
I feel bad. Hold on.
Andrew!
Yes.
I'm sorry.
It's fine. I get it. It's part of the show.
He'd do anything for this show.
You're playing a character after all. Yes.
Thank you. Now I do feel bad.
Do you? Good. Yeah.
All right, Rachel.
High five.
High five.
Well, now we have proof, though, if somebody that Andrew has dated in the past goes on Maury and tries to say that he is the father, we know that that is not true.
Oh, my God. Is the segment over already?
Is that on the air? Oh, my God. Rachel, when the music plays, you stand up, you take your headset off.
You dance out.
Do we dance when we leave? I don't get it. I don't know what we're supposed to do. Okay, bye.
Bye, yeah. Hey, it's called Rage Yoga. Why don't you stick around and talk about this? Where are you going? No, I'm kidding. Be right back.
Seriously. I have rage. I like yoga.
Great song. You know, I was listening to Gladys Knight and the Pips. Man, did Gladys Knight have a voice on that midnight train to Georgia?
Yeah.
Oh,
You're just discovering that?
No, no, no. I knew it, but yeah. I just to really enjoy
the Super. It's funny, but by agreeing to do the Super Bowl show, she's come sort of back up in people's prominence.
Right. Unbelievable. God, my voice. There's a thing called rage yoga, and I had never heard of this before, but apparently it involves beer, cursing, and cathartic experiences. Sounds like going to a Seahawks game. So here is a KHOU Channel 11 News with what is now known as rage yoga.
Yoga itself actually means union. So union with yourself.
Exhale out through your mouth.
And that's not always just like super calm breathing, practicing like quiet time like a lot of yoga places are.
Yeah.
And people need to like release and let go.
Exhale, yeah. Kick on that.
It's a great thing to just scream it out.
Get rid of all that tension in your head, your neck, your jaw, everything. Let it go.
My name is Ashley.
So 53 more seconds.
You don't like Ashley?
No, I just, dropping the F-bomb.
Duzich, and we're at Brash Brewery, and we're going to do rage yoga.
Exhale, release all that shit, let it go.
Rage yoga is a practice that involves breathing, stretching, mudras, yoga postures, and a lot of bad humor. One of the funniest things I think I ever heard was, I told you to do the dishes. We actually take beer breaks during the class.
Cheers.
It's definitely not for everybody, and that's totally okay. I also don't recommend bringing your children. We're all angry about something, and we all have been holding on to an F-bomb for a little bit too long.
Yeah.
So that's what this does. It allows you to have a safe space to let go of your anger and frustration and rage in a healthy way. And then also wash it all away with some ice cold beer.
Have to come up all the way. Exhale.
So you seem dismissive. I think this seems like a great idea. I don't get yoga, and I think that any kind of expression of, they say anger. I'm doing physical therapy. When I'm doing something, a hard exercise, I'm not mad. It's just like, and so you want to kind of, shout out or, grunt or something. And I think this seems perfectly, human, that it would be doing yoga, I think, it can be peaceful, but I think one of the ways to get peaceful is to expend energy outwards by cursing or whatever.
All right. They want to continue to expand the market of yoga, so that you can do yoga with goats. You can do yoga with your baby.
Right.
You can do yoga with a dog. You can do yoga, raging yoga, beer yoga.
I love this headline. Namaste.
Frozen yoga.
S-heads.
What's that?
The headline. Namaste. S-heads. It's like, it's funny because it counters our whole idea of the yoga class. Which I've only seen in movies.
You're not in it. Okay. Oh, my. Did you give me a new sheet? We got some new stuff?
I'll get it to you.
Got some audibles changing for what's coming up at 11?
Okay, good stuff. Right back.